Awesome. All right. So what'd you light up this morning?
I lit up the hook.
Yeah, that's also really good. That's really good. Actually, there's a few folks here at the chapel I've kind of surveyed, asked them about it. They also like the hook. So well done.
I'm glad. I'm glad someone else besides me likes it.
Absolutely. But I have to say, and we've started here, but I have to say, I do like your B-side. That's probably my favorite of your line, I have to say.
Hey, that makes me super happy. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, like, the B-side is such kind of, it's more the cigar nerd, you know, experiment for it. So, I mean, I know it, like, I feel like it holds up on its own, but because it's the whole A and B thing I wanted to do with it, it's like, I don't know. I didn't know how people would respond to it because, like, you know, it's a Churchill. It's not exactly like, you know, a go-to size for most people, but I was like, well, the single was a Churchill, so I have to make it a Churchill, because if I'm going to do it, you know, like, for me, I would like to smoke that, like, in a Corona. I think that would be Tits McGee.
Okay, well, make it, please.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the fun thing, right? You make these, like, one-offs, limiteds, whatever, but it doesn't mean you can't make them again. So,
yeah. All right, Jeremy, we met each other this year at PCA in Vegas 2024. I went on YouTube. I saw that you won the small booth. Was it Best in Show 2023?
Yeah, Best Small Booth. Yeah, Best in Show.
Yeah.
For a booth.
That was cool. So, I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was unexpected. It was very unexpected that my, you know, $300 booth took out all the guys that spend money on it. That made me happy, you know, not just because, well, cool, like, booth. I mean, like, the whole thing is trying to create, like, an ambiance, right? Like, everyone's booth is, like, just a booth, right? Yeah. And it's like the same thing over and over again, but, you know, different colors or different branding on the walls, but it's all kind of the same thing. And like, which is the case for most trade shows, right? I mean, like, not just ours, but I was like, I just want to make it, like, feel like you're in a place, you know, like, so it's campy, not intended to be a pun on that, but, like, it's, that's how I like it.
Well, it worked again this year. I liked it. It was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm working on PCA 25, which will be a little different because it's going to be in New Orleans. But
yes, very excited about that, by the way.
Yeah, so I'm keeping in theme, but going a different direction, kind of more throwback to my first year trade show where I actually built a campsite, like, and I had, like, a fire pit and stuff. So I'm moving into, you know, the whole play on Camp Wildfire. So
I love it. Fun. I love it. Well, I kind of thought it was ironic when I watched your YouTube on Best in Show 23. I kind of had to chuckle because it was sponsored by Don Doroteo, which you might remember. I interviewed Juan a couple weeks ago from Don Doroteo. So that was kind of interesting. But I wanted you on the pod today because you have an interesting story and there's some characters in this story. And I really just wanted to open up and I'd love to take a deep dive into your story on how you started Wildfire. And you can go back as far as you want in terms of the story.
Well, it was a cold night in 1979. My mom was having aches and pains. They were coming on like a hurricane in the rain.
Mm.
And through trial and tribulation, she birthed this.
Indeed.
Right. There's the very, very beginning. I'll just start with kind of my me getting into cigars, maybe, and then kind of like where I was at that time and then what. So I was working a couple different jobs at that time. One, I was working, oddly enough, I was working at a church at that point in my life. I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And on my 18th birthday, I did what anybody who becomes an adult does and went to 7-Eleven and bought a cigar, because that's what I wanted to do for my birthday. A Snapple, kiwi, strawberry. The pairing's not great, but, you know, neither was the cigar.
That's awesome.
So I did a Garcia Vega, and because I didn't know there were actual cigar stores. I knew I wanted to smoke cigars because I had grown up seeing my uncles smoking cigars on holidays, and I just was always enamored by it. And so I was like, when I become a man, that's what I'm going to do. And so on my 18th birthday, I bought one, and then I climbed up on my parents' roof because they're anti-smoking. And I sat up there with my buddy, and he was only 16. So, like, we broke the law because I bought a pack. So we each had a Garcia Vega. We had that and a Snapple, and I knew I was in. So
okay,
I liked it so much that I started using the Yellow Pages to find tobacco stores because it's pre-Google, you know, and seeing like, where else can I buy cigars?
You like about it though? I mean, what, it couldn't have been the flavor. Was it just the experience or?
It was everything about it. It was like, it made me feel like it was like the missing piece to my soul. And the minute I lit up, I was like, that's what I've been looking for. I don't know. It was the whole thing. At that time, I did love. If you have nothing to compare it to, you could say McDonald's is a good burger, right?
Okay,
if
fair.
That's your, fair. So, yeah. Like, I thought it was fantastic. I didn't know there was homogenized wrapper and all that kind of stuff, you know, and that was machine rolled. Right. I just knew I had seen my uncles. And they always had this, like, you know, us kids would be running around. And I was just like, I want to do what they're doing. You know, like, yeah. I want to be a part of that. And they'd always tell me, like, when you're an adult. And they would let me take a puff, or the other kids, like any good uncles do. They would let all of us try it.
Yeah, of course.
And and I was just like, I just want to do this. So I think it was just the... Everything, I think it was more initially what intrigued me was the image of it. Like, this is what men do.
God,
you know, like I didn't play sports. I mean, I did when I was younger, but it's like I didn't play sports. So it's like I didn't have that. And I played music. And I don't know. I knew I was going to love cigars. And so, I quickly found a couple different tobacco stores with like walk-in humidors and just started buying cigars and trying them.
Now at that time though, hold on. So at that time you only had to be 18, because now you got to be 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was within the law at that time. My first premium cigar I bought was a Henry Clay. And I was like, oh, that's way better than these other cigars that, you know. Right. And I didn't know that they were still, I didn't know they were machine rolled. And I just knew, oh, I like this a lot more. And then I think shortly after that, I had an Ashton Classic. And I was just like, oh, and it even like, you know, so it kind of took me into this next step where I was just like, oh, I really love this. So I was working at Trader Joe's. I was working at a church, helping with their music and stuff at that time. And then I found a shop in Orange, which is where I lived in California, and they had a huge selection. So I would go in there, and I would just get like schooled every time. I would just go in and go, tell me everything, right? Like, I was that kid, and I wanted to know what it was all about and why they were different colored wrappers and how that would affect the taste and all that kind of stuff. So like, okay. I jumped in, you know, to the deep end real quick. And I also realized that I couldn't afford cigars the way I enjoyed them at that time. And that's said, I was still buying cigars. Like I would buy like, Questarays. There was a brand under JC Newman called La Luna that was like, they were like $3-4 cigars. They're good, you know? And so I would smoke those. And then the owner would always give me something to try.
Okay.
Alongside of my, I'd come in once a week, buy my cigars, and then he'd give me something to try every single week. So I was like, just kind of getting, submerged by it. And I realized, but so I started, I asked them if they needed help because I was like, well, what's a third job, especially if it'll help, you know, fund this passion that I'm developing.
Right. Right.
And he didn't have anything right away. So I had by that, you know, within a few months I had found the local shops around me. And so I was kind of going between them and I had made that offer to all of them, like, you need me to sweep floors, like, you know, whatever. And it was
PCA. When you say Orange, are you like in Irvine or are you on the, are you, where are you?
I was in Old Town Orange. So the center, epicenter, you know, of Orange County, really. So, So I think it was not PCA at that point, IPCPR or RTDA. I can't remember. I think it was RTDA at that point. It was coming around and the shop owner needed that I was frequenting the most. He needed help. And so he's like, hey, do you want to work for the week while we go to the show? And I was like, yes. So I started like 2 weeks before just to get familiar with the cash register, the basic stuff. Right. And then, you know, he's like, you can call me with any questions. And so I took my vacation from Trader Joe's, I had a week vacation and then worked. So it was a good week because I got to smoke all week. I got paid for that. Plus I got paid. Yeah. So it was a good week. And I never left. I just like after that week, it was like, man, I love this. And he's like, oh, customers liked you. Hey, do you want to like do like 2 days a week? And, you know, 2 days a week turned into three, turned into five, turned into, you know, you started ordering for him. I started going to the shows.
And how old were you at this time?
20.
Okay.
20 years old. Yeah, isn't it funny? I was already working in the industry, but I wouldn't have been allowed to go into the store at the, you know, because I wasn't 21.
Right.
You know, with the current laws. I often wonder if that would have changed anything. You know what I mean? Like had I had to wait till I was 21, at 21, I was already married and, you know, I wonder if I would have made the jump into it. Had I not had the opportunity, you know, when I was
earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I just started working it and then eventually I left Trader Joe's. My time working at a church had ended, not because of the cigars, but just wasn't where I was at anymore.
Can I pause on that for just a second? What was that like being in the church? So this would have been, what are we talking about? Late 80s? What time period are we talking about right now?
Well, I was raised in it, but I mean, this was like late 90s when I was.
So how did the church kind of, were they okay with you having cigars? Like, no. What was that? Yeah.
So what's funny is the church had a parsonage on property, right? So I lived in that, but every night I would sit out on my, because they're all old craftsman houses in Old Town Orange. Okay. So I would sit out on my porch and I would smoke a cigar they were not cool with it. And they were like, hey, we need you to go to your backyard if you're going to do that. Because I was like, I don't like have any problem with it. And they're like, yeah, we don't really have a problem, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And so to accommodate, you know, I would sit in the backyard, but it wasn't as nice of a view. Because I'm just staring at the fence, you know, versus like people watching. Right. But no, they were kind of like, the church I was in was kind of a don't ask, don't tell scenario. So they were like,
all right,
they're like, just don't, you know, broadcast it or promote it. And it's like, well, I'm not promoting it. I'm just, but I'm like, but I work at a shop, you know, like I'm not hiding. And oddly enough, some of the guys would come in, you know, but it was
interesting.
People are just, you know, I know there are certain denominations that are more accepting of tobacco, like, you know, Southern Baptists or, you know, Calvinists, all the whole above bunch. But like mine was not friendly to it.
Okay.
Prior to that, I had gone to the seminary, which they had no smoking allowed, period. So I would leave campus to go smoke my cigars and then change my clothes.
I love it.
Before I came back on the school grounds, because I was like, it's like I loved it. And it's like I would study and either smoke a pipe or like smoke a cigar, and I was just like, you may not like it, but I love it. And
yeah,
I don't think the big guy upstairs cares that I'm, you know, enjoying some leaves on the ground.
Brother. Yep, I'm with you, brother. Excellent.
So it just kind of like shapeshift into something. Like I didn't intend for it to be like a career, but it like seems like little by little, I just kept getting in deeper and deeper to it. And eventually it was the only job I was working, and I was running the shop. And like I said, doing the ordering, conducting events, doing the whole thing. And I got to the point where I was like, okay, I can't own this shop. I don't really want to own a shop, nor do I have any money. So I'm like, maybe I should go rep, you know, get on the other side of it where there might be more opportunity for money. So I started applying when opportunities arose, and I finally landed a gig with Christian Aroa when he started CLE.
How old were you at that point?
30s. I had worked at the shop for 11 years.
Oh, 31. Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I put in some time at the retail level. You put in some
time. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, that transition of me like working a couple days to me running kind of the shop was a very gradual, you know, thing.
Sure.
But the shop I came from was such a like flagship store that like we had all the companies coming in. We had, you know, primaries of these different brands coming in, and I was doing events. So I was meeting these guys, getting to know them. And so it was a great shop to learn, like get my wings at, because it gave me the opportunity to like, because it was the premier shop in Orange County. So
there?
It's like,
Is it still there?
Yeah. It's funny that the shop is Maxmar Cigars, which is now the shop that Small Batch Cigars comes out of.
Interesting.
So it wasn't, they did have an online division when I worked there, but it was really for customers who had, say, moved away to New Jersey and they still wanted to buy cigars. So we would just.
Sure.
But so that was the infancy of like what became Small Batch. And it's funny because even the whole Small Batch thing is funny because the owner, Amar, who's still there, he was a huge, if it was a limited edition, he would buy really deep, right?
Okay.
Really farther, because he liked to have stuff when it was no longer available. Similar to John's, you know, to the chapel, very similar to that mentality of like, yeah, I might be biting off a little more than I can chew, but I like having this cool shit for people to come in.
Absolutely.
And like, and it becomes a destination shop. And so it was very much the same way. But like with Davidoff and, you know, Greycliff and all the old Dunhill and ultra premium brands back in the day. Yeah. And it's funny because when Andrew came aboard and started working, I had already left and was repping, but they had all this old inventory from years ago just in the shop with like, how do we move this? And so then hence they started small batch by posting all this ultra rare old limiteds. Yeah. And that's how that whole thing began. And over the years, watching that turn into what it's turned into is just like fun to watch for me, because that's
super
like,
cool.
You know, I had no part in that, but it's like, oh, I remember those Avo 22s sitting there, you know, and now they're up online and like, you know, getting some good money for it. So it was kind of cool to see that shop evolve as well.
Sure.
Into like,
see the genesis of that. Yeah.
Right. It, mm-hmm. So yeah, I started working with Christian Aroa, CLE and Asylum Cigars and Wynwood Cigars. Wynwood Cigars was headed by Robert Caldwell and Christian Aroa. And it was a partnered brand.
Okay.
And for me, the cigar nerd in me loved that brand because the whole factory fresh, like rolled pack ship the same day.
Yeah.
Like it was the first thing in the portfolio that I was like, I could geek out on.
Yeah.
So I ended up pushing it and I was the West Coast rep. So, you know, Pacific Northwest and California.
Sure.
So Rob and I began to spend a lot of time together because I was promoting that the Wynwood brand heavily in my territory.
Okay.
And he and I just became friends, you know, outside of like just working together. And it was a short-lived project between him and, you know, Christian. They had a falling out. And, but Rob and I had stayed in contact because we were just friends. And he was like,
hey, Caldwell, you're talking about.
Yeah, Robert Caldwell.
Yeah. Okay.
And he had said, I think I'm going to start my own brand. Like, would you want to jump ship? And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm in. Let's do it. Because like it wasn't that I disliked the brand I was in. Asylum was paying my bills left and right, like with the 770s and all that kind of
sure. They make a good cigar, by the way. I like Asylum. Yeah.
So it was just opportunity, and I've always been a guy that likes, okay, what's next? Like,
yeah,
what are we doing next? So I was like, let's do it. So I started the brand with him, with a couple other people, and I worked with him for 8 years. I was the national sales manager. So I built a sales team, learned how to be a national sales manager because I had no training on it, or formal training, should I say. And we just, I got to the point with that where I was like, I did all I want to do in this brand. And I don't want to do the same thing for another brand. So I'm either going to go out on my own or I'm out of the industry. Those were my, like, I was like, I just didn't want to like keep doing the same thing for other companies. Cause I was getting offers for national sales, but it didn't interest me. That's not what I wanted to. It's a stressful job. All you do is put out fires and listen to, you know, complaints and like,
sure.
I mean, it's not all bad, but I mean, you know, so I called up.
Just pause for a second? So let me just kind of summarize where you're at. So 18, 7-Eleven, you get your Snapple, you get your cigar. You're like, oh my gosh, I have found something that just fits my soul. Like this, this is an experience. So you start in the shop there. Maximar, is that what it is? Maximar, thank you. In the OC. You're there for 11 years doing everything, right? So then you become a rep. You befriend Robert Caldwell. He's thinking, I'm going to start my own brand. You're like, fuck, I'm in. Ready to go. Okay? Because, to your point, like either you take another opportunity for a national sales rep, which, like been there, done that. That shirt's in the closet, stressful. But the idea to start a new brand from whole cloth had to be appealing.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, I had my opinions, as does everyone, right, in the process of Caldwell Cigars, like how I would have chosen to do certain things. You know, we started it from the ground up, so I definitely knew the mistakes that we had made or that I had made.
Sure.
In building it. So I was like, I'm not novice to this idea of, you know, building a brand. I mean, CLE had no representation when I started as a rep. They didn't give, there was no account list. It was just like, go sell. And I had to like find the stores, and I had to find, you know, so it's like, I'm not, you know, like that didn't intimidate me. And I was like, well, I know how the importing works. I know how this works. You know, I'm like, all okay. I got to do is find cigars, you know, and blends that I like. And like, yes. You know, I could, if I could get the money to, you know, do it.
Of course.
So
the capital. Yeah.
Yeah. So I spoke with Robert Caldwell and I told him that's what I was leaning towards. And he was like, you should do it. It's your turn. Like, you should go. And I was like,
all right. How long have you been with Caldwell at that point?
8 years.
Okay. 8 years. How did you broach it to him? I mean, what was that conversation like?
I just called him and I was like, hey, Rob, I'm at my end. As you know, I had already prefaced and had multiple conversations with him and the other two owners of the brand that I was tired and that I just didn't feel like, I felt like I had run out of juice, you know? And I was like, this isn't working for me anymore.
There was an expiration date.
Yeah. And so they were already kind of aware of that, just, you know, with where I was at in life and, you know, so when I called him and said, I want to start my own brand, he was like, you should, like, if there's a way we can help you, let us know. But like,
good for him.
We worked out an agreement. I would stay with the company and I wouldn't until my cigars were in production. So it was awesome because I got to do all the behind the scenes stuff, getting, you know, the factory in order, getting blends together, all of that. I got to do that while still being employed at Caldwell. Like,
because that's cool.
Some people thought, like, how did you just come out? Like, you were just working with Caldwell. Now you have a line in the market. And it's like, well, because, you know, like, if you have good relationships with people and you have cool people you work with, like, they're going to support you. So I was like, I did Caldwell first in the morning. And then when I got done with that, this was during COVID now. I would work on Wildfire after Caldwell. So, you know, I just.
How'd you come up with that name, by the way? Wildfire.
So I had another name that I had gone through for the trademark and all that.
Sure.
And it was revolving around the campfire. So we had the logo and all that. And then, you know how, like, when it goes through the process after, it's like, all right, you got it. But then, like, it has to be posted for, you know, 30 days or whatever, 90 days, and people can respond to it. There was a shop that was opening up in the U.S. using the same name that of the brand I was going to use. And I had the trademark. So I reached out and kind of was like, hey, like, you don't have a trademark on this, but like, maybe we could work out a gentleman's agreement. Like, just don't make any house blends. If you do, they need to be made by me, just so there's not brand confusion.
Sure.
And the shop owner like was like, no, like, I'll do you can't tell me what I can carry and can't carry. And I was like, so I was like, I don't want to come out of the gates. Like, I had the trademark, but I was like, how is that going to look? Jeremy comes out of the gates with a company in a lawsuit, like, from the get-go.
No, that doesn't work. Yeah, that doesn't
So work. I was just like, all right, you want to be a dick? Like, I'm going to back off, and I'll figure something else out.
Sure.
But we were, like, very, very near, like, boxes were already being made. Everything.
Oh, wow.
Production was, it was the 11th hour. So it was kind of a, what can we call it if we want to use this, the campfire and the whole ethos of the campfire
right
as a logo, and California was having some wildfires, you know, and and I was just like, that, like, it's a little on the nose, but let's try that one. And like, it went through, so it became Wildfire Cigars.
Okay, interesting.
So it was kind of like, it wasn't my first choice, but I did want something that was like super easy to say.
Yes.
That it's just simple, right? Like, not a complicated, like, you know, something I didn't want to use like a Cuban reference or a Central American reference, because that's just not like me. I'm not,
right.
Obviously, I'm not Cuban.
You don't look Cuban.
So I just wanted something that was like, was easy to remember, you know? Yeah. So it was more about keeping the integrity of the logo than the name for me. And so it's like, that's why, because I mean, theoretically, Wildfire and I have a campfire, they're two separate things. A wildfire would be much bigger, but I was like, it works. It's in the same vein.
It does work. Well, I've done a lot of backpack camping with my kids, and I would say your brand definitely resonates with me. I like the line. Although I will call you on one thing in terms of keeping it simple. I know you got your Bear cigar, and I can never actually say the name of that. What's the name of that?
Yeah, I know. That's where, I mean, I don't know if you and I were talking about it at the shop when I saw it, but yeah, Arteus, you know, and I apologize Arteus to the world for, I was like, one of my biggest pet peeves is cigars that are hard to pronounce, that like, you know, and it's always a Spanish word or like Latin, you know, so I pick a Greek, you know, but even that is kind of like, I wanted to call it Kodiak. That's right. Yeah, I got a cease and desist from, like, it didn't go through because of the chew.
Well,
and I was
right.
Like, of course, right. We're in the same space.
Right.
But again, we wanted to go with a bear. We had the thing. And so like, imagery plays is very, very like important to this brand. It's
significant. Yeah. Yeah.
So then we started doing research on what are other bear names, and like, you know, just and so when I got to Arteus, the Greek bear god, right, which then Ursa Major and the constellations, that's what it's based on. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's rad, I like that. So I just went with it, and then of course no one can pronounce it, so I'm like, I'm that asshole, but by not intentionally, but yeah, I made a cigar that is as hard, if not more, like, you know, than most. I don't know. Well, I still think Elbow Wednesday was harder to say than Arteus. So I think Nick.
Arteus. Yeah. Well, it's a red band. I call it the red band, and I like mm-hmm. it. It's good.
And well, that's, and that is the beauty of the one thing we did with the brand, is to make everything color,
yeah,
like coded. So it's like, if someone doesn't remember it, they can go, oh, I smoked the yellow one. They don't have to remember Revivalist or like, you know, right. I smoked the green one. Okay, that's the Wanderer. But like, it's easy. It's like, oh, that's the one. It's very, so yeah. The red banded one works just fine.
Excellent. All right.
It gets us to the same place.
It does. It does. That's also a good smoke. All right. So you've been telling your story, and I'm curious, because I'm a business guy. I went to business school and did all that. I'm curious, for as long as you worked at the shop, you did national sales rep, you worked with Caldwell. I'm curious, what's one thing that you learned building Wildfire, working with the blenders, working with the manufacturer? What's one thing you learned that was a surprise that you didn't know? Don't need a trade secret. I'm just curious, like,
I think that you're never going to make a perfect cigar. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many cigars that I adore in the marketplace, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, with my knowledge, being more than the average guy, but not nearly as in depth as some of, you know, master blenders and these guys, sure. That's what they do for a living, is just right. Blend. I thought it was going to be easier to come up with something that I was like, that I wanted to put my name on. Okay. But it is far harder than I anticipated. And, but in that process, like, I think it's giving me the ability to like put stuff out that I'm happy with, knowing that not everybody's going to love it, but those people that will love it will like be diehard for it.
Yeah.
Like it's not intended. I'm not making for, it's the same thing with like music. I don't write music for the listener. I write music to satisfy myself.
Yeah.
And like, purely myself. It's for me and me only. And I was at first trying to make cigars. My aim was to make something that would be very palatable, that would be approachable by a large audience.
Sure.
And I was not happy with any of that. And I also, good or bad, like I like to make things with an intention of like an occasion, like where I envision where this cigar or where the B-side is supposed to be smoked in my head. Even if no one else smokes it in that, it's like Revivalist, when it came out, you know, it had like, it got its like 15 minutes of play, and then a lot of guys didn't resonate with it, right? And it's, but the thing is like I intentionally made that cigar to be rustic, like being smoked around the campfire in my head. Like that's sure. where, like, that's where that cigar is supposed to be enjoyed. So I'm not saying that it only exists in that, but you know, because most people don't, they're smoking in a cigar shop or in their backyard or with a friend. And so sure. it may not be the environment. And to me, that affects it. But for the consumer, they just want to grab something. And if they like it, they like it.
Right.
But for me, I created this whole fucking scenario that you're supposed to like have when you smoke my cigars. In my like, and so it doesn't translate to the mass when you do that, but I don't care. Like, because the way I look at it is if you do that enough and have enough circumstances, then it can meet the broader spectrum. Like, something will be in there eventually for someone's palate, right?
Sure. And you're being authentic to you, you're being authentic to what you want, where you envision it, and you're being authentic to your character, your life story. I mean, it works. It's all aligned.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing to go for. I know, but it's also just, it's how my brain works. So that's just how it's going to keep going, you know, good or bad. And like, it's nerve wracking every time I put out a cigar, because I don't know if people are going to resonate with it. And I'm trying to make stuff that's interesting. And, but it's for my palate, right? The sure. only one I can judge. I mean, I have some guys like friends that I appreciate their input. Mm-hmm. And so I'll run stuff by them.
Sure.
And knowing their palates, knowing that one guy is super into like, you know, this style of cigar that sits on this end of the spectrum versus this guy, I already pre-know, like, he's probably not going to like it, but he probably will.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the middle, you know, and it typically plays out that way when, but again, it's like, I don't want to make something that's just there. I want it to have an impact, even if it's not even if you don't love it, like, if you can get what I'm going for, then, you know, that's the artistry side of it. Now, yeah. That's the problem with my head, is that's not the greatest mindset to go start a business, is to let me like show like my artistry for it, because it's only going to reach a certain,
sure.
you know, audience.
Sure.
But again, it's like that, I can't separate it from myself. Like, that's just, it's the way I am. So it's the way I'm going to keep doing it. And hopefully enough people along the way find enough where it resonates with them, where there is, you know, eventually something that can be in rotation for them. And, you know, yeah, the brand can grow. Like, I mean, I think you and I were talking, like, you were very kind in the way you said, but you said some, like, you know, the earlier was not like for you, right? Or in other words, you said that. And it's like, yeah, but that, like, that's okay. Like, you sure. know, I'm not, you know, if I take a song I write and I write aggressive music, right?
Yeah.
It's rock. But I mean, if I show it to someone who's exclusively into classical, they're not going to be like, oh yeah, this is my jam.
Right.
Maybe in some weird, like, every once in a while, the stars align and you get someone that you totally yeah. don't expect, but yeah. it's like, I'm aware, you know, but I'd rather have something that causes a reaction versus this is just another bland cigar
yeah.
that I've smoked 100 times before.
Well, I can tell you a good story. At least it's good in my mind. I can tell you where I first smoked the Wanderer. So this was last year. I think it was around April, May, and I really needed to get the Oregon Coast. It's going through kind of a interesting time of my life, and I went to the Oregon Coast and came into the chapel, got a couple Wanderer sticks, because at the time I looked at the Wanderer and I'm like, yeah, this looks good. And I smoked a lot of Wanderer sticks on the Oregon Coast, and I got to tell you, it's a really good memory. I really liked it.
I mean, that's awesome. Because, like, you know, you get, like, you have a cigar where it gets attached to a memory, like, uh-huh. it becomes,
yeah, I'm a getting nostalgia. Chills about it right now, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Like there becomes a nostalgia or an attachment to it. Like, I will, if I'm in a shop and I don't know what I smoke, sometimes I'll grab Henry Clay because it just takes me back.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. is it the same experience? No, but it's like, oh, this is where I came from. Right. And I have certain cigars attached to specific memories, just like when you're feeling a particular way and you put on a song because yes. you want to go to that space. And yeah. so I love that. And to, like, be a part of anybody's experience. Like, I just had a guy hit me up, or he had made a post on Wildfire, like, enjoying Memorial Day, like, finally unwinding, trying out the hook. Right. Nice. And so I text him back and I was like, dude, thanks for, like, letting me be yeah. a part of that unwind for you.
Yes.
Like, I'm glad yeah. you tried mine. I hope it was what you wanted it to be, that experience. And he wrote back and he's like, no, I had a great time. Like, it was exactly what I hoped it would be. And I was like, that's awesome. And he got it from the chapel.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. So
awesome.
Just a right. walk-in.
Yeah. All right. I want to go another direction here, because one of the things that I really appreciate about your brand, and I want to see if we can give this person a little bit of love, your designer, your artwork, your design, your motif is awesome. I really, really like it. Can you talk about how you found this person and oh, yeah. how you collaborated to kind of build your artwork? Can you talk about that?
The unsung hero of Wildfire and many other brands. Yeah, sure. Jacqueline Sears is a beast. Not only a beast, she's one of my best friends. We started working together. She worked originally for CLE. That's when I met her. She uh-huh. had got brought on to do, she did web design and graphic stuff out of Ohio. She got picked up by CLE to start doing like some of the weather marketing for it, right?
Okay.
She also became, because she lived down in, she moved to Miami from Ohio. She became friends with Robert Caldwell in the okay. Wynwood. So she had left CLE on her own, but she came aboard to Caldwell from the get-go. So she was part of the okay. OG crew. So okay. all of the badass, like, marketing and stuff that came out of Caldwell, like, and the whole fuck Caldwell campaign that we used to, like, do, and the videos, that was all her, right? She's just amazing at what she does. And over the years, she and I just got closer and closer.
Yeah.
Eventually, she left Caldwell. She went to Drew Estate. She was responsible for the water towers that Drew Estate does.
Okay.
Like, she has done so much in the industry that has gotten recognition, but no one knows that she's the one behind all of that.
Okay.
And she worked at Drew Estate, and then she worked with JD Brands on the alcohol side. She was part of that whole project.
Okay.
And then she left to come to California to do the same thing, but for Weed Maps, which is, you know, a weed tech company.
Okay.
So she was like a higher up in like the same thing, design, marketing, all of that for Weed Maps. And obviously when she moved to California, she and I got even closer. She had left the industry. She was kind of burned by the whole, like, I'm over it. Just no doing what she did. Yeah. And she's making really good money. And when I called her and told her I wanted to start like Wildfire, I was like, but I need you. Like, right. And she was like, fuck yeah. She's like, let's do it. Because it wasn't a like sales pitch for like, do you want to work with this brand? It was like, we had cultivated, we'd hike together, we'd hang out, we'd have, you know, like, so we had gone past the working together and just become very close. So she was like, yeah, I want to be a part of it. And I was like, awesome. So she was kind of behind the scenes. And then last year at the show, well, 2023, she made an appearance for the first time back on the show floor.
Okay.
In like, you know, six, seven years. She hadn't been there, and everyone was like, what? And I was like, yeah, she's like part of the brand. And then this year she was there for the full show. So it's cool that she's kind of come back out, and she works for herself. She contracts and does stuff for brands in different industries. She's done so many like repackaging for different brands that like, and never has gotten any kind of like credit. You know what I mean? Like, but she's,
well, we're giving her credit now because it's well earned. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And people are, it's funny. Someone just hit me up and they're like, what AI generator are you using for all your posts? And I was like, buddy, you have no idea. And I was like, this is mixed media of multiple forms. And I'm like, and I couldn't even tell you. And I was like, this is not a, we type in, you know, Jeremy, you know, a camp counselor thing, and then boom, something comes up, and that we're not using that. You can tell when something is straight like AI generated. And I'm like, this girl utilizes all these different like things, tools, to produce stuff. Yeah. To use it as a tool instead of like, you know, like we've had so many conversations and she's like, all these graphic designers that are afraid of AI, it's because they don't know that it's a tool. Like, they're afraid that it's going to take their job. She's like, but if you know how to utilize it, she's like, you can make next level like stuff. You just have to be versed in it. And that's what I mean. Like, she just is an incredible talent and a freaking good human being. And it's like, I love that she's a part of the brand. And so,
well, that's what I love that story. And shout out to Jacqueline. I think that's what really brought me into the cigar world are the people, the relationships, the people, the culture, just really, really good people. I would say, I don't know if you've noticed my background with Between Two Humidors, that actually took me 30 seconds on AI to come up with this image.
Well played. Well done.
Thank you.
There are humidors, and there is the fern in the middle, which is even funnier. But you don't make the interview super awkward, you know, so like you're doing your own spin on it. You know, it's not
No, we're giving a nod to Zach, of course, with Between Two Ferns. But Yeah, I thought between two humidors. And so, you know, I was going to do a deep dive and to find out what image I could use, what I could license. And I'm like, no, let's not do that. Let's just, I mean, I've built websites, you know, you're always trying to find imagery and licensing artwork. And I just went to ChatGPT, put in my inputs, in 30 seconds, boom, this came out. And I'm like, well, shit, that looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, it's so funny. The thing I've noticed is when you take a creative person, right? Like someone like Jacqueline, and I'm sure this is true with just creatives of all sorts. If you dictate what they have to do and what they have to produce, you get solid stuff, but it's like, it's a job. But when you take them off the leash and you say, like, it's just yours, do what you want.
Go get
and you trust them. Yeah. And there's no, like, when people are like, oh, but, you know, it doesn't look like what was with Caldwell or Drew Estate. And it's like, yeah, because those were always controlled settings, right? Like, I want you to produce something like this. For me, I do not interfere, like, with, I just say, like, hey, we have something coming. Like, and she goes, all right, cool. And then I just let her interpret, do her thing. Yeah. And like, that's what it, I'm always happy with it. And she's happy because it, she actually gets to do what she wants to do.
Get creative. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
like there's some creepy ass pictures on my Instagram of me as like Krampus and stuff that I probably wouldn't have said, like, hey, let's make me super creepy or like my face melting off. But she's like, let's do this. And I'm like, all right.
That's
so cool. I like it, though, because she understands me and the brand so well since she's been a part of it that it's like it's all within the ethos, though. It works. So like. I don't have to like, there is no management because I don't have to like, I just, you know, I think only once or maybe twice, like she's come out with something and I'm like that, because there's quite a few pictures. I've been known to get naked and there's like back, you know, if I was drinking and having a good time, I might, you know, Will Ferrell in Old School. I might run down.
Let's go streaking.
Yeah, yeah. That might be me to a T. So there's plenty of photos existing in the atmosphere. And I'm like, no, please don't. Please don't.
No, please don't do that.
Like, I'm like, I understand what you're going for. She's like, but it's funny. And I'm like, I can laugh at it. But I don't think the whole world wants to see me in that way.
I would probably agree with you on that. I'd probably agree with you on that.
I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be the best. And she's like, but it's funny. Yes. It is funny.
It's good to collaborate with funny, creative people. That's awesome. All right. So PCA 2024, give me results. How'd that go for Wildfire? How'd you do?
So it was a good show for me. We're growing. The new product was, I didn't have samples, as you know, of the B-side at the show.
Yeah,
and I wish I did, because what happened is everyone smoked the hook, was like, sweet. And so they like went all heavy on it and like, it's great. And they were like, oh, the B-side, oh, it's a Churchill. All right, give me a box or two, right? And they were like kind of scared of it.
Yeah.
Either just because they didn't get to try it. So that is, so the response wasn't as strong on the B-side. But once the B-side has hit the market, now it's like, oh, and I'm having stores call and go, yeah, give me a couple, you got a couple more, I want to, like, so, which I kind of knew that was gonna happen, right? Because if you can't sample it's just gonna be a little bit of a slower burn to it. But I'm opening up, you know, I opened up some more distribution. I started bringing on brokers in specific territories, because, you know, I want to build this brand to be, you know, a mainstay, like household name. Right. And so the only way that's going to do it, it's just, I said from the get go, I would do it myself until I couldn't.
Yeah.
And like, I can't maintain with any level of good service doing it just myself. Yeah. And that was the biggest, when I was having conversations with retailers, that was the biggest thing. They're like, dude, we love you. Like the brand's good, but bro, we need some support.
Yes.
And, so, okay. Then like, then we need to go this direction, you know? And that's right. Part of business is constantly pivoting and reconfiguring. Yeah. Yep. So like, that's the process, that I'm at now is I have a couple, I'm bringing on more because, I don't, you know, support's an important thing. This is a bizarre industry. So many other, it's so personal that it's like almost too personal because it's like, take another industry. They don't, you know, like liquor industry. They don't give a fuck who's behind the bottle. All they care about is the bottle of the juice in it, right? Or what year it is, or if it's rated high or whatever, right? In our industry, it's so personal and it's a fantastic thing, but it's a double-edged sword. It's also hard because it's like, if I'm going out and I'm selling the product and I'm pushing it in the stores and I'm just doing, and I'm living on the road,
yeah,
there's no value to me as a brand owner coming back to that store if I'm the one that's always maintaining it. And you're cultivating relationships with consumers, but then it also doesn't have, like, it's like when you do an event, it doesn't pull out the same response because everyone's just like, oh, it's Jeremy, he's our bro, he hangs out here, right? Yeah. Whereas if like Willie Herrera or, you know, Nick Melillo, they come out, everyone's like, whoa. And it's not because there's such icons, although they are, but yes, it's really more so because the scarcity, like they have a people the selling exclusivity, stuff.
The scarcity. Yep.
And so that's part of the, like, well, I need to sell cigars, so I have to be out there, but it's in turn kind of affecting it negatively as well. And so, you know, that's definitely why the value of like getting the sales team together is so essential, is because it's like, so that it can be more of a thing when we come. Plus then my attention can be, when I'm at a store, more focused on the relations and hanging with people and building that rapport versus let me tell you everything and pitch you my cigar, right? Like that
well, you had a great event here. I mean, you had a great event at the chapel. I hope it went well for you. I thought it went great.
No, and I mean, the chapel's an one of the rare stores, because like I have a broker for the territory and he was already going to be up in the area, and he was like, bro, I can't make it to the chapel, I already committed. And I was like, don't you worry, we got it handled, because like I've been, you know, since Caldwell, and then we, you know, we're working with Room 101, like I've done so many events at the store. I was like, no, this is a different, the chapel, it's like old friends every time I come in, you know, like it's not the, oh, such and such is here. No one cares. It's just like, let's have a party. And that's why I mean, it's the only shop I go to that I know that once the event is finished, I'm going to spend the rest of the evening and night with people from the store and John, the owner of the store, going out and painting the town red and falling in love with a bartender that, you know, like,
I wasn't going to mention that.
It's all right. It's all right. I mean, it was a fun night, you know? And, no, it just makes it fun. And like, I love doing the events there because like, I know like most stores, I'm going to finish the event at most stores and I'm going to go back to my hotel. There's very few stores where I'll spend 13 hours with people from that store, you know,
and want to hang out with them. When I was walking the showroom floor there at PCA with John, I felt like I was with a rock star. I mean, I was nothing. I mean, John would walk up somewhere and he was greeted like royalty. It was pretty awesome. All right. Well, this seems like a really good place. Where's your next event? Where are you going? Where's the shop?
Next event, Next event is in San Antonio. I'm doing right around. I had a trip, but it just got postponed. So now I have a full month home.
Okay.
And it's a 4th of July event. I'll be in Texas doing a big blowout 4th of July thing with the Club Humidor guys, Keith Rumbo and them, like fantastic shop, fantastic guys.
Excellent.
So that'll be the next. I was going to be doing in a week, Canada, launching the brand up there. The cigars are already up there, but okay. Timing and stuff, it didn't line up. So the product is there. They've already been selling it, but we're going to push it back a little further to give a proper introduction.
Good.
So
yeah, good. It's important.
So because of that, it kind of opened up the month, which is nice because I can get a lot of like stuff behind the scenes done. So
absolutely.
I have a few more months. I've been on the road every week for the past, you know, like basically Wednesday through Saturday type thing over the past.
Okay.
Since the trade show. And so I have this month and then I have a bunch of stuff. And then like once it'll take me through like late September or October. Okay. And then I'll finish after I'll be done with the events for the year. And then I'll go to finalize stuff at the factories for PCA 25.
Awesome.
And then, you know, and then I'll get December to be kind of home and just enjoy Christmas caroling.
25. You got some good stuff in the works?
Yeah, I have two. So, I mean, the third release of the LE series, which you had the intro, then you had the hook. So the third one will be the breakdown.
Okay.
And, then I will have another core line I will be introducing, like of regular production. That blend is done, but we were going to use it for an LE, but I liked it too much to do as an LE. So I was like, okay, let's wait till 25 and we'll put out that line.
Sure.
And then that'll kind of complete the portfolio for now, because that'll give me four different cigars that are regular production. And then, you know, this is my flagship. These are the core lines, and then I'll just keep pushing with that. So, I'll have two offerings next year, one LE and one regular production.
Excellent. Well, your portfolio is certainly growing, and it's just getting better.
I think so too. So yeah, it's fun. It's fun. With like how I was saying, you know, like the breakdown, like people can expect, it's going to be a full bodied like cigar. Cause when it's that whole thing, right? Like when you're trying to design something to be a specific thing,
yep.
Especially with an LE, I'm not trying to like the intro was a Connecticut, but a Connecticut with like, you know, it has broadleaf in it and Dominican Piloto. And it's a bit of a harsher, like I say harsh, but abiding is a better word, not harsh,
okay.
But like abiding Connecticut, because it's like, all right, the introduction of a song. I want something that's going to like captivate them. Right. And then the hook, I wanted to make something that was more versatile because that was more approachable by a larger audience because that's your chorus, right? You're something that's going to like people will come back to. And then the breakdown, well, that's the heavy part of the song, you know, for a rock song. So I'm making a strong ass cigar.
Okay.
And so it's not, you know, like that's what I mean by it's like I'm not trying to make a cigar that I want to smoke every day or every like I'm trying to make something that's specific for the intention of the series. So it'll be stronger than what I typically would make for the portfolio, but that's what it's supposed to be.
So be a nice special occasion cigar. Okay, so you had talked earlier about how when you think about a certain cigar, a certain label, there's a certain scenario in which you'd smoke that. So where am I going to smoke the breakdown? Give me the perfect scenario of where I'm going to smoke the breakdown.
When you've been out all night drinking and you decide to have a nightcap of a cigar, it'll hold up to everything.
So after a night at the D or maybe Westside Tavern, where you're on the love of your life, you're going to knock off the night with a breakdown.
Yeah, it's gonna be the crescendo, right?
I love it. Well, let me finish with this because I want to ask this question, which I don't know if there's a tie in the cigars, but I'm curious on your take, because one of the reasons I started this podcast was, you know, I'm super curious about cigars. I come from a marketing background, kind of hospitality specific, but another kind of core subject that I'm just fascinated in, and I try to read up on it every day, is artificial intelligence. What do you think about AI? When you think AI, what does Jeremy think? Give me your 2 cents on where we're going.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, there's aspects of it that are unnerving to me, right? But then again, anytime something new, really like with technology, there's always the fear of where that's going to lead to, right? And we're still so, you know, like social media, like the effects of, like, it's like, oh, this is rad. You can connect with people. You can post. Yeah. You can, like, but then also the downsides to what social media does, you know, with
which we've had a lot of research now. I mean, we like social media. We obviously market on social media, but the negative consequence, especially with kids, like, we didn't know that
right
how many years ago, you know.
So I don't fear like AI like taking over the universe type of thing. I think but I think its benefits could, the downsides of it could definitely be like, you know, less in labor, you know, needed and things like that, that could negatively impact, because I think you're always going to have handmade goods, right? Like people are,
yes,
dude. I mean, you can type in AI, right? Music generators, and it's pumping out like really well-made crafted songs. And the crazy thing is you have like Spotify and some of the streaming platforms, you have artists that are charting that aren't even real artists because they're not having to pay any royalties out. They're having like, it's already being done. So the negative is impacting the industry, because like, if you're a record label and you can create something for free, right, and not have to pay royalties, and then essentially, all right, we need live performers. Well, labels have always put together art bands and artists, so that's not new that they could have someone to just perform this stuff.
Right.
But I think that negative also pushes then there's something about AI, which it's like, you know, it reads everything, right? And it can create based on what it knows and what it's read. But it's like, has an AI, you know, can it have its heart broken? Can it lose someone it's loved and know how to like articulate that in a way that hasn't been expressed before? So I think it'll change the game, but I think it will force those that are creatives to kind of push the boundaries and make better art, right? Like kind of like what I was saying with Jacqueline uses AI and these things to her advantages as a tool, but she's still creating. She's not just taking one and putting it on and saying, this is from me. She's taking it. She's manipulating it. She's adding other elements and she's doing her own thing. And I think that's the same thing. Like, I think we'll end up with a bunch of really generic AI bullshit on the radio and the stuff that's like, it's all works. It'll all be
Sure.
You know, but it's not going to have the soul of like what's created. And I think it just forces us to like, okay, well, we have to, you know, think a little harder, like, or dig a little deeper. Like, for example, when I write a song, right, and I'm writing lyrics, and like, I don't have the largest vocabulary, right? I read, but I don't have the largest. So sometimes I'll go in to like a Google, like another word for such and such to try to help.
Yeah, just the good old-fashioned thesaurus. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, what's different between that and, you know, you typing it in and an AI doing it? Really, it's just a tool to help provide, to spark. So the AI will just figure out the word and will just say it. But it's like, but I want to find a more creative way of saying it. Right. Like, so I have to, am I going to do it through a metaphor or like an idiom or like, and it like, cause I want it to be well crafted. And so I think we'll get a lot of generic stuff. And then I think we'll get some really beautiful art because it's going to force people to like think outside the bounds of like what's being done.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like how you think about that. Yeah, it really is a tool that you can, it's like a collaborating digitally and being able to draw upon all the inputs, you know, those large language models. That's interesting. I like that. Yeah, Jacqueline's a good example.
Yeah. There's my AI take.
I love it. I love it. Jeremy, we're oh my gosh. We are past an hour. Incredible. Time flew by.
Pew!
I really, really wanted to know your story. Thanks for walking me through that. I like your story. It's a great story. I'm glad that the relationships you've built with, again, that cigar lounge in the OC that you started.
Maximar.
Maximar. Love that story. Working with Caldwell. Love that story. And I just wish you continued success, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. And good luck at your next event. We'll see you at PCA in New Orleans. Super excited about that.
It'll be fun.
Yeah,
awesome. Go get some gumbo and some shrimp etouffee and some jambalaya, and I'm a happy man.
Yeah, and top it off with a nice beignet.
At 3 a.m., of course.
With a breakdown.
Yes. That'll be the... That's the perfect. I'm going to tell everyone that I hand them out to at the show, wait till it's 3 a.m. and you're getting your chicory coffee and beignets, then smoke it.
Then light it up.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Jeremy, thanks for the conversation. Really appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Hey, oh, one last thing. Where can people find you? Where can we find Instagram? Give me your website. Give us all the details here.
So Instagram's Wildfire Cigars, Facebook Wildfires, Wildfire Cigar Co.
Okay.
And then wildfirecigars.com. You can go to the website. You want information on the blends. I have a full, like, we haven't even announced it, but there are sales already. Like, we have a full store on the website that like, it's drop ship stuff, but like we come up with so many designs and I can't afford to just carry an inventory, endless merch. Right. So we have a store. So if like, you know, you want some kind of cool swag, there's very cool stuff up there. So
I will need a trucker hat for sure. I will need a trucker hat. Yeah.
Awesome. And those are the three, platforms, and you just, otherwise, you'll just see me around when I'm in your area.
Awesome. All right, Jeremy. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Cheers.